and you do need that classic, the early adopters, and then technology gets refined and yeah. And it gets cheaper and yeah, that would be. I mean, yeah, I'm never an early adopter, and like that I take the risk, but I can see the benefit and can see that we need to move that way.
Yeah, that I try and future proof as much as you can, but yeah. Sometimes you look at it and you think, how can you future proof against that? Because every day is a massive school day,
yeah.
And where we're charging 4 hours now for what I would call the minimum charge you should install. That's going to drop down to two an hour without yeah. having such a surge on the electricity. Yeah. So it is going to change, but by having a 4 hour, everybody parks up at night. You've got plenty of time to charge. You yeah. don't need
yeah.
to get any quicker than that.
Yeah. Well, presumably there's some then technology that can spread that load. If there's a window of sort of 10 hours overnight to charge, and that not everyone is charging for yeah. the same four yeah. hours.
Well, if you get the big Tesla now in parts of the country, when you come in from work, you plug in, that actually puts power into the grid,
yeah,
and then takes it back out again when there's not as much.
Wow.
Right, I'm going to kick in. You've been talking about a minute now.
Yeah.
But while you've been recording, we just need to know who you are. Just so that's quite useful. No, it's great. No, just the conversation's brilliant. You can pick it up from there. I will sound like I'm in the background of this because it's directional, so it'll pick up you much more than me. So. Continue your things. Don't let me. I'm going to sit here and say nothing and everything else. You can just talk about it. So, who have we got here, and where are we? That would be useful.
We are sat outside the Angler's Rest in Bamford after the Hope Valley Business Zoo, and I'm Karen Weir of Run with Karen,
and I'm Jim Sweeney from Go Electric.
Off you go.
So back to our.
Yeah. We've just been talking about the infrastructure of. Can we charge cars? The infrastructure is there, but if everybody plugged in at the same time, obviously it would drain the resources of the infrastructure we've got in England at the moment. But there are cars available of actually putting power back into the infrastructure to take it back, which is a long way down the line. But there are plans afoot to make it so that we can work within the access we've got.
That's incredible to know, though, because Joe Public don't know that. And I think sometimes life seems quite hopeless. You know, we're destroying the planet, we're doing all this. And you just said to me that, you know, that actually for 3 months last year, we didn't, you know, we were solely could exist off solar power and alternative energy sources. I mean, I think this is really these positive messages are the kind of stuff that need to go out there, and not just the doom and gloom of we're destroying the planet and, you know, global warming's happening, and because it does can make you feel really hopeless that there's no point. But this is great.
Yeah, we are a long way behind Scotland. Scotland have really took the bit, and they're really going forward with it. We've got a problem. We always try and find what's wrong with things before we see what's right with it. But there are a lot of things that are a lot better than people are in interpretation of electric cars. You know, people see, for example, they buy a FEV and they see a 35 mile range. They think that car will only go 35 miles. That 35 miles is not to drive the car, it's to assist the car.
Yeah.
So, you know, that will nearly quadruple in some cars your MPG with a petrol engine. So, you know, the impact on the environment is when the engine's working harder, the electric kicks in, so it doesn't kick out the fumes and the gases in cities where it's used, where it's more important.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, is it just human nature that we always dwell on the downside, or is it something that's come, I don't know, with 24-hour news and that's just what people are more interested in? Because it's the same thing yesterday. There was all this stuff in the news about how food choices now are killing people more than smoking. And that's just a very black and white message that's gone out there, that suddenly people are going to be going, well, it's okay to smoke, actually, because I eat a healthy diet, you know, and it's or vice versa. And it's just these little snippets of information and it's giving the wrong messages. And I'm sure there are plenty of people dying because they make the wrong food choices, but it's not down to because they just eat bacon or they just, you know, they're not getting enough whole grains or whatever it is in their diet. These messages just don't help people, and it's same with every subject. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the big picture. I think it's the same with everything we do. If we just look at the focus on the you know, headlines sell newspapers. Newspapers don't really sell now to what where they used to. So media and the television take that on board, and the radio take that on board. But the common practice is the headline is smoking's not bad for you.
Yeah.
People go away and they think, oh, smoking's not bad for you anymore. And then when you hear what they say after that, you know, because sometimes you can't hear that you've got out of the car or you've switched off the radio for whatever reason. So in your mind, you've just got that headline factor.
Yeah.
And as we all know, how many times do you see on the internet now where you see a soap star is doing such and such, and then you read into it and it's nothing to do with a soap star.
Yeah.
They've just used them to get you to read that with the adverts that go with it.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the world we live in now, and it has changed enormously in the last sort of 5 years. If you'd have said to me 10 years ago, I can sit and watch a television program on my phone, I'd have laughed.
Yeah.
And now you can do everything on your phone.
Yeah.
You know, you'd run your business from your phone.
Yeah.
You know, so it is enormous. I mean, one thing that amazes me is, you know, and it's real basic stuff. How far did you run?
84 miles.
In one go?
In 3 days. Yeah.
I'm exhausted listening to it.
27 miles, 28 and a half and 28, something like that.
In three consecutive days?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what's the headline there? I've ridden it already. Three marathons, a marathon a day.
Yeah.
That's what you say.
Yeah.
And everybody, that's puts in, you know, it doesn't put it in perspective, but that's what people lock on to.
Yeah. Well, if you said a marathon a day to me, I'd think, well, they're called Snickers now.
Yeah, exactly.
But
there you go.
Yeah, three Snickers a day doesn't sort of run. But yeah, three marathons. Oh. Yeah. My mindset doesn't cater for that at all. Never, even when I was fit, I couldn't do long distance running.
Yeah.
You know, my mind wouldn't. Yeah, you know, when you get to that pain barrier, that's enough.
A big part of it though is do you enjoy it enough to want to do it? So it's like everything in life, isn't it? It's what are your priorities in life, and that's not something I want to do every week or even every year. It's I've set myself a goal this year, and that was actually it's not the worst thing. That's the training weekend for it. But you know, and there are people that I know that do longer, crazier, in my perspective, you know, 100 miles in one go, that's ridiculous. And I did another training event, and there's people that do 100 ultra marathon, so longer than a marathon, in 100 days, so things like that. It's what floats your boat. What floats your boat, and what you know. If you wanted to do it, you could do it. And you say the pain barrier and stuff. It's not that. It's not inspiring for you to do that, and that's absolutely fine. And I think again, this is another problem with human nature. We shouldn't do things because we feel we should. You've got to do things because you want to do them, and then when you want to do them, you get the expert help that you need. A lot of people, you know, they just think they can go out and run a marathon just because they see other people doing it. But in any other area of their life, particularly to do with health, you would go and get expert help if you didn't know how to go about running a marathon. And if you wanted to run a marathon, Jim, I could coach you to run a marathon. But you, that's not your priority. That's not something that floats your boat. And that should definitely not be on your bucket list, because it's not something you want to do. And it's all about being honest about what does float your boat, what you enjoy.
It's about what motivates you.
Exactly, exactly.
That has never been one. My main motivation is leisurely time.
Yeah.
And it always has been. Even when, you know, I played football at quite a good level, I still like to chill.
Yeah.
I hated training, always have done.
Yeah.
I was quite fast, but I wasn't a long distance person. But my son, who's 31 today actually, he got that long distance gene in him, what we used to call it, and he could go out and run around Derbyshire and walk through the door and then go for a walk. You know, just didn't tire from it.
Yeah.
Which I think you've got the same
metabolism,
whatever you call it. You know, it's something I've never been able to do.
There is a certain genetic, you know, you are given a certain genetic starting point, and you know, there's some things you can't hack. But but that's the thing. It's something you've never wanted to do. And therefore you shouldn't try. If you woke up one morning and went, oh my God, I really now want to and need to do a marathon, and that's the only thing that's going to give me some fulfilment in my life, well then I'm the person to come and speak to.
Yeah, well, I'll just don't hold your breath.
No, that's
it could
fine.
Be a while.
That's fine.
But I totally understand why you and others do it. I just sometimes think, where do you get that energy from? You know, and I know having that energy creates the energy.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's just, as you can see with my slimline figure, it's not something that.
This is the radio gym. Don't worry about that. You can talk about being a marathon.
I'm 10 and a half stone.
Exactly.
On my right leg. But I like my own company as well, which you'd make think, well, you'd like doing that. But it just doesn't ring any bells.
But that's good. You get your camper van, you go off, you drive somewhere remote, and you just walk and enjoy your own company and the scenery. And
yeah, this morning on the way here, I think I mentioned it earlier, that Owler Bar, three deer sat grazing, and then I came around the corner, when you come up over there, and a barn owl sat on a post.
Wow.
And it's like, what place do we live in?
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
It is.
So that's something you want to do, isn't it?
I and funny enough, though we live in the middle of the country, I love the sea as well. The sea just does something for me. It draws me to it.
So how come you're living in the middle of the country, but as far as possible from the sea?
I don't know.
No?
My parents are from a place on the northwest coast of Ireland, which literally you walk across the road and the sea. I absolutely adore it there. Even my kids, if we said, where do you want to go on holiday, they would say Donegal. Every time.
Did you live there?
No, I was born here. I used to spend all my summer over there as a kid, because obviously as soon as the holidays, probably 2 weeks before the holidays, so all my sort of growing up friends are all over there. But it was heartbreaking to come away. But then you get back and you see this and you think, well, it's not that bad. But I'm very fortunate. I live in Peak Districts and we've got a place in Donegal where, the beaches are totally unspoilt and the kids loved it, And you just breathe that sea air in. It's next up America from there. It can't get much fresher, can it?
Yeah. No, I love it. I mean, because I moved up here just over 3 years ago from London, and I'd been clamouring to have space and countryside, and it was a big part of when we... Because, we could have gone to the coast, and I do like the sea, but actually, for me, sort of mountains... obviously hills, peaks, whatever, is more where I am at the moment, although I wouldn't mind a bit of warmth, so a bit of the south coast would be quite nice. But every morning I just look out and I look up Wynn Hill, and there's a heron and kingfishers, because there's a river at the end of our garden, and I just feel really lucky and really privileged to be able to do this. And then there's a lot of my friends down in London going, you're really brave to have moved out of London, and I just think, you're really crazy to stay in London.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's shortening everyone's lives.
How do you find when you go back?
I don't like it. No. Well, it's nice to go and see friends, but I can't wait to get back up here.
Mm.
And I really do think city living is shortening people's lives. I mean, you just have to see the car pollution. That was in the news the other day, wasn't it?
Because
London's starting this extra low emission zone, I think next week, and it's... and they were showing these heat cameras that were showing the exhaust coming out and being far worse for kids because they're nearer the ground and stuff. But it's then the parents are still breathing it in, and it's the fact that when pregnant women are breathing it in and they're finding in the placenta these particles of pollution and stuff. And it's just not.
I think the government are supporting the growth of the electric vehicle. The main letdown seems to be the manufacturers, because they've just not developed the cars that at the price bracket or that do the job. To me as a manufacturer, and I'm not a manufacturer, but my target market would have been the company car, because the tax benefits are there for them to buy them, and they've not even got one yet. The Tesla 3 is coming out in November, which has sort of spiked the market to say all the rest of the manufacturers, we've got to compete with these. But it's, we're still years away from it. So as we were talking earlier, if I was going electric now, I would go a FEV. Because the infrastructure's not there, and we can't just, there's not enough there to actually say, let's just go and fit electric chargers, because we haven't got the stock, we haven't got the people to do it. So it's going to be 2 years before we get anything like...
It is a bit chicken and egg, though, isn't it? Because the manufacturers aren't going to produce in massive volume or until the consumers are demanding it. And the consumers are still, you know, convenience over anything else. I think one day we are really going to have to wake up and go, actually, it's not about convenience for us. It's about saving this planet that we're living on. You know, the whole thing about the... Ferrari about putting charges on cups, you know, in coffee shops and stuff like that. I mean, these are small changes, small inconveniences that you have to carry your own cup or have your coffee at home and don't have it out, you know, and for the sake of not producing all this single-use plastic and this single-use products that, you know, some of the things that scare me the most are the growth of these like Primark, and where you can go and buy a t-shirt so cheaply that you don't even need to wash it, you can just chuck it away and replace it. I mean, it's not sustainable, it's not, and we're just and it's all about consumer convenience. We've gone crazy. We no longer want to walk anywhere or take any effort to do anything, you know, minimize any manual labor at all, and it's just it's not sustainable, and it's not how we should live.
No, I totally agree with you. And again, referring back to Scotland, they've really sort of got the bit between the teeth. I believe, if not all of it, a good part of Socky Hall Street, which I'm not sure, I think it's one of the longest streets in Europe, is now zero emissions. You can't drive down it unless you've got an electric car.
Right.
Which, you know, that's really getting to grips with it. I've not seen any city that I've been in, including London, you know, although I like you, I try not to go there, that has got that sort of motivation to really go for it. And Nottingham have just done quite a bit of work, and that, you know, they're being driven by, it sounds to me like they've been driven by one man who's really going for it, and he's now spreading it out of the Nottingham city. But, you know, he needs support from other cities, because if not, it's going to be a lonely ship.
So what's the positive things? I mean, I agree with you on this idea that I think if you look at the bigger picture, people don't get the big picture because it's too big. Mm-hmm. It's beyond their comprehension. Anyone's coming here, mine. But Scotland, I can see why that's, you know, there's 5 million people there and they're all sort of kind of in the same boat and they kind of buy in.
Yeah.
But London, what is it, 10 million now? Something like that, you know, who don't get it. There's too many divers. It's too big.
Yeah.
So how do we change that?
Well, I think one thing that I've noticed, and I'm finding more and more when you talk to people about electric car chargers, is they say, how much? You know, they just look at a cost. And it's not a cost, it's an investment. You know, especially for some of the businesses in the Peak District, plug in there, but, you know, it is an investment. They've got to, if they don't have the car charging available, they won't get the customers with electric cars. And because Sheffield and surrounding areas aren't really electric, they think it's not happening. It's here and it's staying.
Yeah.
And it's starting to really get some speed up now. Although we're still miles away from, you know, being totally electric, it is starting to move fast now, and the manufacturers are getting on board with it. The councils are slowly but surely getting on board with it. I despair sometimes talking to people, because all, similar to what I was saying, all they look at is the bad bits, you know. And if I try and explain to them that that's not how it works, they think I'm selling to them, you know. And all I'm trying to do is explain how the difference between a hybrid, a FEV, and a full electric car. And they switch off as soon as I start to, you know. So, you know, it's just a case. It's a slow burn, and we've just got to be patient and bring people on board, you know.
Do we need to do something different, though? I mean, I don't know, you've got kids. Have you got kids?
No.
You know, that was the first thing that came to my mind. You know, kids walking to school.
Well, I've got a granddaughter, the smaller they are, the more you feel it affects them, you know.
Yeah. So I'm saying that, forget about all the, you know, trying to get the council, trying to motivate. You know, actually, do you need, like this morning's presentation was quite interesting, where we were talking about props. You know, visuals, you know, you now imagine a trust as a treasure chest. That's a seed sown. Now that's what I'm going to do, so I've gone away with that. So the idea that, you know, you're if you know those adverts that came out with, you know, those people coughing up Gunge because they were smoking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, everybody remembers it because it was horrific.
Yeah.
Now, if we align something like this, do we have to shock people into change? Or can we do it in a nice way?
I think, but the thing is, I mean, just look at the Blue Planet and the plastic thing. Mm. So that was shocking, and a lot of people agreed it was shocking. There's a small group of people that off the back of that were sufficiently shocked they've changed their behaviour. But there's still an awful lot of people that have just gone, it's too big a problem. That's, you know, right, my shampoo bottle, my plastic cup, you know, is not going to make the difference, or me not using that is not. And I don't know. I think this is partly a societal cultural issue now, that we only care about ourselves, or our very, very small little group immediately around us. There's not the looking out. I mean, the horrendous situation in New Zealand, we all saw the Prime Minister there, though, and haven't we all said we wish we had a leader like her?
Yeah.
You know, and it seems that in New Zealand people do feel more connected to each other and not just shutting themselves away in their little unit, be it a family or whatever, because, you know, it's that things need to change at a societal cultural level, that we actually give a shit about other people and we think that everyone has a right to be here. And you know, and again, you know, another example, cyclists and motorists, you know, we all need to share the roads. You know, some people, I'm a cyclist and a motorist, and I think that gives me a better perspective on things. But, you know, there are plenty of motorists out there that don't see cyclists as people. They just see them as an annoyance. And actually, it's fine to not, you know, run them off the road. They don't see the consequences of that person might be injured or whatever. It's like they're just slowing me down, you know?
Yeah.
And it's
the worst. I've done it. I stopped. I mean, I cycle a bit, but I don't do it because I don't like riding on the road.
Yeah.
But I actually, because you're at the same level as the cyclists in here, I actually slow up to the same rate and talk to them and say, you've got about 5,000 cars behind you at the moment. Yeah. You know, do you realise? And then you get the arguments about, I've got the very right on the road and so on. I said, fine, I'm not, but I cycle.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of tolerance, isn't there? I mean, there's this idea.
And I think, on the cyclist side as well, I think some people turn into this mega defensive.
Yes,
I've got a right to be here.
Yeah.
They've got a right, and they've got a right to ride 2x2, but I've got a right to walk into the Sheffield Wednesday ground in the Cop and say I support Sheffield United. It doesn't mean so I don't get hurt. You know, we've all got rights, but we've got to take them blinkers off and look at the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, motorcyclists, I find, have seen that bigger picture because they get hurt worse, but they've got nothing to defend them. And you know, there are some very arrogant cyclists out there.
Oh, definitely.
And
cyclists give cyclists a bad name, and you know, it's like, and motorists give motorists a bad name.
Yeah.
And it's that lack of tolerance of each other, and these clash points that happen. So I'm not saying that the cyclists are any better behaved than the motorists, but nobody is willing to give an inch for each other, and it's just, you know, and I think it's just why these things don't, you know, you do have to shock people, but even that's not enough these days because we're desensitized to it.
I'm trying to get an idea in my own head. I create all these ideas, sort of visual thing. Is where is that threshold? Where's the tipping point?
Well, I think
is it New Zealand with 5 million people?
Yeah.
I've got this thing about at the moment about 5 million people being roughly the size that people can comprehend.
Yeah.
I can see 5 million people, but I can't see 60 million.
Yeah.
So that's over my head.
Yeah. Mm.
But whereas New Zealand's response,
yeah,
horrific as it was, actually was collectively saying, yeah, we care about this. But they've all gone back to their own little world.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
But they are working that. We're not learning from it.
No.
Mm-hmm. So the other thing that they've done is they've instantly changed the law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, And just going back to the cyclists, the law for cyclists being able to ride 2x2 is when there was probably
you know,
there were probably 4 cars an hour past them.
Yeah.
You know, there's 10 cars a minute passing them now.
Yeah.
You know, and it needs to be realistically looked at, as with horses. You know, one of my pet hates with horses is there's a young girl boy out on a horse on the road. They're not old enough to be driving a car. You wouldn't probably let them out on a busy road on a push bike, but they can go with a horse. Road sense is massive, you know, and it, you know, part of passing your test should be being able to observe roads and seeing what's happening. You know, my son's just passed his test. They've not taught him how to drive, they've taught him how to pass his test.
Yeah.
You know, that wouldn't make him a driver. Yeah. You know, he's now learning to drive.
Yeah. So we're back down to experience then. So why do you need a test and leadership, coming back
to your original question. Yeah. Right. So the thing I think that is really shown at the moment is our leadership in the UK. There isn't any, and there's not any obvious coming through either. And then you've got the Prime Minister in New Zealand, and she is just absolutely leading by example. Her behaviour, she's got it right. She's not been afraid to change laws immediately. I mean, there's a massive gun lobby in New Zealand as well, which is always the reason that they've never changed them in the States, because the gun lobby is too strong. But you know, how can you say there is a right to protect your, you know, have arms, protect yourself? Maybe that's fine, but you don't need a submachine gun to protect yourself, do you? I mean, there's different levels of bearing arms.
Where do you use it?
Yeah, and again, it's something that's never been addressed, or not addressed in the States, because they're, well, the two party politics don't allow things to get through. But you know, they've just made the change. She's been a leader. She's stuck to her guns.
She's been made leader. I don't think we allow our politicians to. We're too quick to pull them up. You know, again, the headlines tell it all. You know, Margaret Thatcher, bless her, didn't care. You know, whether you like or dislike her, she was a leader, and she made decisions, and she did. She stuck by them. You know, I'm not saying I did or didn't like the decisions she made, but she fought for them, and she continued to till she got what she wanted. That to me is a leader. You know, if you've got a general in the army, you know, you don't necessarily want to go and face somebody, but you'll do it because the leader tells you to. You know,
isn't that conditioning that's getting to?
It could be, yeah. But in business, you know, a business leader makes the decisions that not all staff like. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's not a democracy in business. They do what the leader says, and the leader stands or falls by it. Right. You know.
So tell me about the Hope Valley. So you know, there's the one thing about these conversations that's brought out the diversity, and it is unlimited, literally unlimited combinations. You know, people talking about. So we have our own issues in the Hope Valley, but you know, in terms of where we live here, why it costs, all these things. But I think we can make a difference here, just by us, rather than thinking that we need a leader or a politician or something to be able to dictate. You know, like the Peak Park planning or something like that.
Yeah, we care.
We care, exactly. So we can understand, we care, and we can see it. We can kind of, as I said, kind of see it ourselves. You think you can make a difference. This is something I will probably take out of here. But I actually almost have been motivated to go up and put up myself as a politician. Mm. You know, these guys.
Really?
If these guys can do it, surely.
Yeah.
You know, and make a cock it up, you know, which is what's happening. So how do you make it?
I think the way we've just been this morning, the networking this morning, but the other thing that I really do enjoy is the Inspired by the Peak District. You know, it's a marketing group that is inspired by people in the Peak District. And the last one we went to, you know, I'm not just inspired by the Peak District, I'm proud of it. You know, I'm from the Peak District. And I'm really, really proud of saying, I know it quite well. I've been brought up within it. But we need to care about it and not just take it for granted.
Yeah, but how could you as an individual make a difference then?
Well, one thing that about the inspired thing keeps it in house, sort of thing. You know, we go local, we work with each other locally, which I think we've got to do, because if we don't have the local businesses, we haven't got an infrastructure. You know, we've got to cater for the tourists, which is the backbone of the Peak District. Mm-hmm. We've got to cater for them, and if we don't have the local businesses to support that, the self catering, the bed and breakfast, the hotels, the pubs, don't exist. Yeah.
So is this like small acorns?
Yeah, I think so. We've got to believe in it as well. Right. You know, we've got to believe that where we live is a beautiful part of the world, and I think a lot of us take it for granted. Mm. Yeah.
And I think that individual actions do make a difference. And it is interesting you say about that 5 million number. You can get your arms around the Peak District. You know where the boundaries are. You can think, well, you know, I can make a difference in this area, and I can keep my business within this area, and I can You know, be responsible. And I will, every time I go out, pick up litter that I see other people have dropped. You know, and the tourists with their dog poo bags, you know, things like that. You can't just go, it's a losing battle. We have to go out and we have to prove that we do care sufficiently not to just not take action.
Yeah. There was something on one of the media sites earlier today, and there was a sign put in the end of a beach, and it just said, please take 3 pieces of rubbish with you when you leave. You know, a simple thing like that is not going to cure it, but it's going to help.
Yeah.
You know, and when you think about it as well, where does all that come from?
Yeah.
You know, it's not just people on beaches. You know, there's got to be some tips going out there. There's got to be people deliberately tipping into the sea, because it there's that much. When you see how much there is, you think, that's not people chucking the wrappers down. Not trying to say that's the right thing to do, but, you know, take it with you is the answer. But it's not all about Joe Public on a beach doing it. There's something bigger going off there as well.
But you'll know from running round here that you go out and, you know, and particularly if it's been a nice sunny day, the stuff you will come across. You know, last year when there was it was really dry and there were no barbecues allowed and this kind of stuff, and you would still find the tinfoil barbecues, you know, the portable barbecues that people have just used and left. And these aren't the people that live in the Peak District. These are the people that are visiting it, that get the privilege of coming on holiday and visiting, or whether they're coming from a long way or not. But they're not the locals, because the locals do care, and we are the ones that go around picking up this stuff. And I think you just have to keep on doing that, because otherwise, you know.
So it becomes a habit. I mean, it's not being evangelistic. Is that the right word? You know, in fact, your London friends, you know, they wouldn't, you know, think why they come up here. If they see you doing it, it gradually gets in.
Yeah.
But you need to start. I often finish on a run with more kit than I've started off with.
Yeah.
Carrying bottles is my big one.
Yeah.
Yeah. People leaving, you know, glass bottles and lying around all there. And you do find the most remote parts.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But the other one that we got a big thing was, you know, those Chinese lanterns.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there's 1 year, was it? About 5 or 6 years ago, everybody bought one because it was a container.
Yeah.
Came across and everybody celebrated New Year's Day.
Yeah.
And we had thousands going over Sheffield, and they all went into the Peter Street.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then for this next year, I spent picking up pieces of wire, which you ran into. It really hurt, actually.
Yeah.
You ran into,
and
things like that and everything else. So, but those, you know, that stopped. And suddenly realise what they were doing, but, you know, so you kind of just have to be just highlighted.
Yeah.
You know, I say it every day. And
well, there is no easy answer in anything. What we do have to, when you bring your kids up, you don't tell them once. You know, you just have to keep plugging at it to get
it's putting effort in, isn't it? Putting the effort in.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of people say, well, it's my right to do this, it's my right to do that, I have a right to. Well, not always. If it hurts other people or hurts the environment, you know, you might have the right to do it, but is that the right choice to make?
No. Yeah.
Ignorance is no defence.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. We sat outside this thing here. It's green.
Yeah.
It is a waste bin.
Taking up a cycle part.
It is taking up a cycle part. So there you go. It's a balance.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know how long we've been going on for?
A long time, I think.
33 minutes.
Wow.
Really? Is that
We're gonna have to divide it up. No, I'm gonna have to. Yes, it is good. But I'm gonna have to divide it up.
We'll cut it back to 5 minutes.
Well, originally I did. No, this is show you how you have to change. Original idea was 5 minutes was going to be too long, and now the average length of people talking is 15.
Right.
Easily.
So we're above average, Jim.
You're way
of
above
course.
Average.
Of course, we knew that.
I'm going to, I'll edit that one in. My name's Karen Weir.
You're still recording.
I'm above average.
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, right. Well, I'm going to have to go because
I've got to.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop this now.
I'm going to watch this.
Brilliant.